Jig Bentley's, where it's your birthday, your spring break, and your bat mitzvah all rolled into one. Get in here, let's get some food.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 473 for the week of August 21st, 2023. I am President of the Navy, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Kiwi Brow Pop, Sarah D. Bunting.
The world is waiting.
And meteorologist Tara Ariano.
Summer's over, guys. Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. We are guestless because this is a very special episode. We are marking 10 years of Extra Hot Great Mark II. Our first episode dropped on August 21st, 2013. And so for this very week, we decided to do a flashback. We are each coming to the table with an episode that aired in this week in TV history. So August 17th to 23rd. And Sarah, why don't you start us off?
If you don't mind. First of all, listeners, thank you for being along with us on this journey.
Yes,
whenever you stepped in, we are thrilled that you are here. My selection is the fourth season finale of The Amazing Race, an episode called It's Like Adam Building His First House, which aired August 21st, 2003. Season four is the Chip and Ryken season, and visitors to the Television Without Pity boards might also remember this as the Amanda and Chris season. They were eliminated early, but spent some time on the boards. I was chatting about this episode last week with friend of Extra Hot Great, past and future guest John Ramos, about the season, and we both remembered it as the show's first sort of sure, fine outing, but I wasn't sure if we recalled this correctly because it was 20 fucking years ago, so that blows my mind. But anyway, before I move on to my research on this topic, my fellow panelists, any particular memories of this season? Any at all?
I remember Chip being an anger monster, and he is in this finale for sure. Mm-hmm. We definitely were still watching the show at this time, but this is not a show that we have revisited or rewatched any of the seasons. So all of this was particularly fresh for us, but it also has a different resonance for us now than it did at the time because a lot of it takes place on the Big Island where we used to live. So that was fun.
I had no memory of this at all. I didn't recall any of the challenges or anything like that. Is this one of the years where the people on the Amazing Race boards organized the post-party?
Yes.
Because I feel like I saw Chip and Ryken at that. I feel like I may have been at that one in particular.
Yeah.
I think I was at two.
Right.
And that they didn't really want to be there, as I recall. Like, CBS is like, make an appearance, and they're like, all right.
Yeah, I think this is right about when this became compulsory. And I did check in with our Amazing Race recapper extraordinaire, pop culture happy hour host Linda Holmes, to see if John and I were remembering or not remembering season four accurately. She had basically the same reaction for what it's worth. Quote, okay, it has been so long since I thought about the season that I couldn't remember literally one thing about it until I looked it up on Wikipedia. So she didn't really remember the season, but she remembered, quote, the Chip and Dales, which was the Chip and Ryken team.
Yes.
And she remembered that Kelly and John, who are also finalists and figure heavily in this episode, were acting very much like they had been ordered to go and could not wait to leave, which I also vaguely remember. But on the other hand, like, I enjoyed this episode more, I think, because I didn't really remember anything about this season.
Yeah. Totally.
And like, even knowing the outcome, which I did, because, you know, like Linda, I was on Wikipedia. It's not a perfect episode of television. It is 20 years old. There are things that we would do differently. Certain moments that seem a little appropriative, let's say. Let's hear clip one.
Teams must now drive themselves 20 miles to the Chappaqui Aboriginal Cultural Park. Here, they will join in a traditional ceremony in which fire will signal tribesmen to bring them their next clue.
I mean, no shade on the message sticks ceremony, which was cool as hell. But like, first of all, they weren't participating in it. They were standing there stiffly watching it.
Enduring it. Yeah.
Yes. And it felt icky to me. Was I alone on that?
For me, the takeaway, like overall, beyond just these moments of, oh, it's 20 years ago, was the difference. Either The Amazing Race is overproduced to the point where I don't believe the results.
Yeah.
Or it's something like this episode, and I won't get into the particulars, but where travel things happen and games are won or lost based on things that actually happen. They try a little bit to like amp up the maybe they're catching up kind of stuff.
Yes.
But generally, you see the writing on the wall pretty early, and that is what happened. I enjoyed those more, even if it's not like to the wire kind of stuff. I'd rather have honest results.
For sure.
Than manufactured editing, which I feel like the show gets more and more into as it goes along. It seemed like weirdly naive to me to watch this in a very endearing way, except for the stuff that was like, oh, shit, 20 years ago, we're all watching them like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a interesting TV journey to see just how things were made back then and choices that were made.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, there is a wit to this editing always. Like, that's always been there. And I think that continues. I've only watched like one season in the last 10 years, but I think that's still pertains. And this seemed like a fairly typical Amazing Race finale for this era, like good mix of tasks, fairly decent shuffle forward design of the leg, which meant that the final three teams could have gotten bunched or rebunched any different number of ways at various pinch points.
Yep.
But, you know, as Dave mentioned, like the editing is pretty good, even though there's a team that they leave the checkpoint first and then you just don't see them.
Nope.
Yeah.
For 20 minutes. Yeah. And then until they're told via clue box that the other teams, like, which are like four time zones away, have already finished. And it's like, and then there's like a granola bar in there and a wah, wah sound effect. Like, it's quite sad.
Yeah. So like this season seems, the ethos of the editing seemed to be condense the proceedings.
Yes.
Whereas editing later seems to be create the drama.
Right.
Where perhaps it's not there.
And
I know it sells better. But I know what I like better. Right.
Yeah. It's hard to pull a clip, obviously, to illustrate the way that they will do these smash cuts, that it's like, well, you know, like one team being like, well, this team could also be on a plane that's like next to us in the air, and then they smash cut elsewhere. But here's a sort of illustration. Let's hear clip three.
I know we're at least ahead of Kelly and John's, but I have no idea what position we're in because we haven't seen Jeff and David, but I'm sure Jeff and David found a way to get here.
Having not seen any other teams come into Sydney, we have a pretty good hunch that the two other teams have moved north to Honolulu.
Like, the first thing after that bomb is like, Sydney, Australia. Like, are you even in the same side of the earth? Not really. Like, yes, they are. But I enjoyed that and sort of waiting for like, well, when are we going to see where they aren't?
Yeah.
Because like, the teams have bounced through like four states by now. They're also trying to research stuff using interacting with other people and paper items, pay phones, civilians with little flip phones. It was so great. So, and especially in taxis, that they're just throwing, literally throwing money at this problem through the, over the barrier and being like, do you know where you're going to this tourist destination? And sometimes they do.
Yeah.
Yes, Dave.
In that scene, so I know we're like, we're just jumping around to bits, bits and bobs because it's Amazing Race. We've all watched the type of stuff you see on Amazing Race. But they're in Arizona. They're in Phoenix, Arizona, towards the end of the episode. And they're grabbing cabs to get to the USS Arizona anchor in, you know, some downtown park in order to pick up their next clue. And they're like, as you say, Sarah, yelling at the cabs, like, we got to get there as fast. This is a race. Bracket. Why does the cabbie care? So then they do the right thing, which is throw money at the problem. Here's $50, more pedal, please. Fine. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The other team is like, here's $100 now, then another $100 once we get there, if you're a speed demon. What I was thinking was, if I was the cabbie and there's cameras, you go halfway there, you stop and say, how much is it really worth to you? You basically blackmail them into giving you $500 to really go fast the rest of the way, because, you know, who cares, right?
Yeah, that is such a you reaction.
Yeah.
don't know.
I don't blame you.
It was my first thought. I don't know what that says about me, but you know.
Yeah.
I mean, taxi drivers don't make a lot. I've been watching Taxi, the show. Mm-hmm. You know, they're all just blue-collar working guys out there trying to make a buck. And there's these yuppies throwing away $100 bills like they're nothing.
Yep.
Get some.
Yeah, totally. The other thing that was striking in this one is, like, there's no esprit de corps among the teams at all. Mm-hmm. Like, they all seem to hate each other. And I vaguely remembered, like, yeah, I think John and Kelly, like, they were jerks, more so him, probably. And maybe that was part of it. But it's definitely in 20 years, I think people, and some of them don't, and God bless, because they're the ones that make reality shows good. But I think by and large, people have a better sense of, like, oh, I can't act like I really want to because I'll look like a shithead on TV.
Yeah.
There's less of that on display in this episode, to the episode's credit also.
I mean, it's the fourth season, so they should be wise to part of that anyways. And the point for me that illustrates that is there's two SUVs and they're driving very close to each other on a very wet highway. And one of them takes a turn too quickly. It doesn't flip over, but comes close to like skidding out and flipping over on the median.
Yeah.
And it was, I forget who was driving. Was it Chip?
Chip was driving and he's the one that spun out.
Yeah.
Right.
And then the reaction shots, such as they were later when he's in the car, he know we just fucked up. He know he like went too far and he's taking everything too seriously. The reaction is him just staring ahead, not saying anything, making sure somehow that the flaps over his ears physically have closed so that he could no longer get any feedback or answer any questions. You know when you fucked up.
Yeah.
And you fucked up because somebody said, slow down, take it easy. You're going balls out. We don't need balls out. You're going to get some trouble. And you knew better. And then you fucked up because you didn't know better. It's like when you're at an intersection and you just fuck something up and the person pulls up beside you. And suddenly that's the time you have to fiddle with your radio for about 30 seconds. So you don't make eye contact. That was but a whole scene of it. And it was kind of great.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was the moment when I looked up, like, are Chip and Riken still together? And, like, of course they're not. And apparently, like, not have even still been together at the time that this aired.
Yeah, I think they may not have really been together at the time that they crossed the finish line. And it could have been because Chip was such a crotch, as our esteemed colleague Kim Reed would say, about Riken being like, can we not be going 65 miles an hour through a hairpin turn? And Chip's like, it's fine. And then John, the Jersey douchebag, is like, I'm from Jersey. Nobody's getting past me. And Chip like bumbles off the road and does like a 480 degree spiral. And John is just like guffawing. And Kelly's like, well, that's a shame. Like, wow. I'm also from New Jersey. I would at least slow down and look to make sure they're okay. And then point and laugh, but that's just me. I don't know.
On the state track, did you notice the pinpoint in time when we were all wearing our state pride meme shirts?
Everyone Ringer loves tees. A Jersey girl.
Texas is for lovers.
New Jersey, only the strong survive.
So that means we're a year away from the next phase of those, which were the Jewish girls
Southern
girls, that Italian girls. What a moment in time. It made me miss my Charlie Brown shirt.
I miss my girls' bike club ringer.
The other fun part of the episode for me and Dave, as I alluded earlier, was the part that they spent on the Big Island, because that was a lot of like Dave and I trying to be, you know, Hawaii airport cop, of like all of them saying we need to fly into Honolulu, and you know, us wondering like, wouldn't there be a direct flight from Tokyo to Kona? Do these people even know that's where they want to go? It's certainly possible. At that time, there wasn't. We think probably now there is. But they also drive past a Borders bookstore in Kona, and we were like, no, RIP that Borders. It was open when we started going to Hawaii, but not at the end, for sure. I think that's nothing now. I don't even think anything moved into that spot.
It's a boring office building now.
Okay.
Got like an insurance company or something.
Yeah. It was a really funny episode. It was fun.
Yeah. I really enjoyed not only revisiting that time when like this was absolutely the class of this genre of
show.
For
sure. Yes.
that you can just tell, like the team that you barely see for half the episode are such Audie bros with their like frosted tips and little soul patch. And it's just like, oh boy, this was a moment. And I haven't watched it in a while, but I mean, I might try it. There's a new season coming end of September, and why not?
Yeah.
Let's see if there's some teams I attach to, and if it's way over-edited, I can just not finish the episode, or not finish the season. So, yeah.
I'll say this, after Jessica Lise, a past and future guest, like, pitched the new season, like, the first post-pandemic season to us, I did hook back into the show, and it's still good. I mean, it's the stuff that Dave calls out, it's definitely there. Like, there's certainly a lot more bunching, and like there's less opportunity for anyone to get super far ahead, for sure. But it's still like basically the same show that it always has been. Like, they haven't really screwed with the formula that much. It's not like Big Brother where it's like you have this or Survivor for that matter, where there's like so many advantages.
You got the true,
like,
false immunity idol.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yes, there's none of that. It's still just we are in a race and we have to complete these tasks, and we're going to probably fight with each other along the way because it's a high stress situation, and that's what happens. Like, and it's an hour. It's not like Survivor where it's like it eats into your whole night to watch an episode. Like, it's still a good show. I was happy to get back into it, honestly. So, you know,
I don't think
that's a bad impulse to follow.
Mm-mm.
All right. I'm going to wrap it up with one last thing.
Dear Mr. President, there are too many states nowadays. Please eliminate three. I am not a crackpot.
I am not a crackpot, but the intro vignettes you see during the credits of each team, after they've been eliminated, they should reshoot whatever they use for the team, but with skeletons, so that you know those teams have been eliminated in the episode that you're currently watching. I am not a crackpot.
No, that's smart. I agree.
All right, I'm up next. We're going chronologically through our picks. So I am here to talk about Royal Pains, Season 4, Episode 10, unfortunately titled Who's Your Daddy? It originally aired August 22nd, 2012. Royal Pains, it's a classic USA Network Blue Sky show, maybe the Blue Sky show, in that it is set in the Hamptons in the summer. It is about generally wealthy people having medical crises that are virtually always resolved within the hour. Our protagonist is Hank Lawson, played by Sarah's former college classmate, Mark Feuerstein. He used to have a high-stress hospital job in New York, but then a wealthy donor in his care died of cardiac complications while Hank was checking on someone less fancy, and Hank got fired. And then Hank's accountant brother, Evan, played by Paolo Costanzo, convinced him to set up a concierge practice in the Hamptons. The rest is history. There's also a patronage from Boris, who's like a shady, rich European. He's played by Campbell Scott. He has some obscure disease, but Boris isn't in this episode. His name is Boris. He's got like a super long, you know.
He was a showgirl.
Campbell Scott does not look like a Boris, but all right, moving on.
I mean, his accent is vague, and I think he's from like a made-up country even. Yeah. Like, it's that kind of show.
Mumblevania, sure.
Exactly. Castlevania.
Is Boris from Castlevania?
Accent to Stan.
Because Royal Pains is a summer show, I had options for which episode to choose because it, you know, was usually airing new episodes in August. So I went with one that has horses, which Sarah likes, and Gary Cole, who I think we all like.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunate title aside, Who's Your Daddy is a classic, straight down the middle Royal Pains episode. The action mostly revolves around an event for rich Hamptons people. In this case, it's a polo tournament. And our A patient is Gary Cole's guy. His name is Simon. He is a retired finance dude whose second act is owning and playing on a polo team. And he's in his 50s. He's pushing himself too hard. Hank diagnoses an obscure but treatable condition in his shoulder or whatever, and also convinces him to take his health more seriously. And his team wins the Canterbury Cup for the first time. Hooray. Sidebar, would a prize in a horse-based sport be called the Canterbury Cup? Because I feel like no. Our B patient is Fanny, played by Miriam Shore. She is an underwear entrepreneur. She's at the tournament to convince Simon's polo star, Rafa, who's played by Cotan Fernandez, to model for her. She breaks her leg, and then she has an embolism. She's also fine. She lands Rafa for her campaign. Divya lands him for other reasons. She is Hank's physician's assistant, played by Reshma Shetty. Let's hear clip one.
You kept writing, right?
I did. I guess sometimes I feel more myself around horses than I do people.
That's why I'm here. Para escaparme de todo. That means to escape everything. To be alone but not alone.
I love that feeling.
You know, you and I have a lot in common.
That would surprise me.
What if I can prove it to you?
All right, well, how are you going to...
He kisses her. Back on a long shot of her in her cute dress and her little sandals. We'll get back to that. Our C story is what passes for a serialized arc. Evan is engaged to Paige, Toronto's own Brooke Dorsey, we claim her, whose father, William, Bob Gunton from The Shawshank Redemption, is running for Senate. The kind of candidate he is gets tipped when Evan gives his formerly incarcerated reformed con artist dad, Eddie, who's played by Henry Winkler, a list of conversational topics to avoid with William at a dinner for the future in-laws. Evan says golf is fine to talk about, but not Tiger Woods, so got it. Evan is usually embarrassed by Eddie. That's particularly true in this episode, clip two.
So I was thinking, General, do you have a warm-up act for your stump speeches? Huh? Because I would be so happy to come on down. I could give them an inspirational spiel, talk about my book, and warm the crowd up for you. Then you come out to John Philip Sousa, and bing, bang, boom, we would be off to the races.
I apologize. We have to go. Paige, would you sign for the meal?
Yeah. We'll have to do this again really soon. Bye.
Bing, bang, boom, Dad. Are you nuts?
Well, I thought it was a great idea.
You put him on the spot just now. You made him so uncomfortable he got up and left.
Evan, they are traveling tonight. Maybe they just were anxious to get going.
Why didn't they just say that then? All I needed was one night from you, one night for you to put me first instead of yourself. You couldn't even do it. You couldn't even for one night because all you care about is yourself.
But the reason they actually left the table early is that a scandal has broken that makes it seem like William Chappaquiddicked his assistant 30 years ago. But
I'm
then...
so glad you also used that as a verb because so did I in my notes.
I'm sure.
Of course.
However, turns out they were not having an affair. She was helping him adopt Paige, which is how Paige finds out for the very first time that she even is adopted. But before that reveal, Eddie is very kind and nurturing to Paige. Clip three.
You know what I think? I think that these people make up those stories all the time, and I think the more salacious, the better. You know, to keep the viewers going, you have to listen to, believe in, and trust your parents right now. That's all.
You're right. I know for a fact he would never cover up a death. He's just not that kind of man.
He's not.
All right, come on. So that is what you have to hold on to right now. And never forget that your parents love you. You know who else loves you? The Lawsons. And you know why? Because you're family, right?
So after this, Evan feels bad for being such a dick to his dad. And you'll notice Hank gets very short shrift in the summary. That is because Hank is usually the most recessive slash boring character. And that is another aspect of this episode that makes it very typical of the show in general. So when we finished screening this episode, Dave had one comment. It feels like the right place to start. Dave, go ahead.
Why does Tara like this show?
Okay. I said Sarah would get it. And I'm dying to find out if I'm right. Sarah, why do I like this show?
Well, it's such a blue sky show. Like, it's pretty to look at, but it doesn't make you feel bad about how pretty it is. Mm-hmm. It's flirty, but it's not too heavily sexy. It is heartwarming, but you're not necessarily sobbing. It's diverting, but it's not that serious. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just this lightweight Pringle of a show with a shit ton of statement necklaces that really bring you back to a time. I don't know about you,
earrings
but
too.
I was like, there is so much J. Crew jewelry in this that she and I were probably texting each other about that day when this aired, slash when I was watching it, I was writing down like every single piece. Mm-hmm. I just think that it's basically warm-hearted, but it's the same reason I liked White Collar.
I fucking have that in my notes. Like, this White Collar was that show for you, for sure.
Yeah, that it's like, there's plot, but like, it's just diverting enough without being taxing or like heavy. It's just a summertime blue sky Pringle of a show, like I said. Mm-hmm. Did I come close? I feel like I did.
100%. Yes.
Okay. I understand that answer. So I suppose it's a show you're not paying an immense amount of attention to as you watch
no,
it.
No, no, no.
Yeah.
At least one more screen in play, at least for me. But yeah. I mean, it's still, yeah.
So, okay. Next question then. To play devil's advocate, yes. What is the difference, setting aside, from a show like Royal Pains versus a show I think checks many of those boxes you just said, like When Calls the Heart?
Oh, When Calls the Heart is not aspirational. Like a huge part of the show is the fashion, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like it's fun to watch. There's fun guest stars. Mm-hmm. Sarah's right.
Like, almost had her watching When Calls the Heart.
Hey, you can force on us to watch When Calls the Heart.
I will. Oh, it's coming. I gotta watch one of those episodes. Weirdly infatuated.
Jack Wagner, horses.
I'm saying.
How hard is this for Buncey?
It should be a crossover with Again okay. with this because of the Jack Wagner factor. Right. But yeah, this is just like, and I will say, this started in 2009. We had only been living in the U.S. at that time, like for a couple of years. There were definitely fewer shows, like there wasn't streaming yet. This is a pre-streaming show. And like, there was a lot of shows that I stuck with for way longer than I would have just because it's like, there's so much more TV here. Like, there's so much more options. Mm-hmm. Like, think, Dave, how long we watched Burn Notice. Like, a long time.
Yeah,
like,
it was weirdly really long time. Did.
And it had the advantage of starting like the summer that we moved there. Yeah. And it was like perfect where it's like, holy shit, everything is different now. And this is something where like, if it started now, I probably would never pick it up. I would never stick with it. But it's like, it somehow wormed its way in where it's like, this is my summer show. This is like my treat. It's such a Friday night, like the end of the week, your brain is tired. You just want to absolutely zone out and have like something on the screen while you're looking at a catalog. Yeah. And that is Royal Pains to me.
I think.
Yeah. Or this would be like Tara and Sarah Cation.
Yes.
Right. TV. This is totally hotel TV, but like the summertime equivalent. This is absolutely something that we would sit while we're like biting price tags off of all from Target in Hanover, New Jersey. We would have this on and may have, in fact.
And I'll also say, it shoots in the greater New York City area. It requires a constant influx of character actors for guest stars. It's not going to, as Sarah said, make you feel bad. It's like light-sided Law and Order.
Are they still doing Blue Sky stuff?
That's a good question.
I mean, I don't think so.
I'm looking at usanetwork.com. USA Originals are all reality shows now.
Yeah. Oh, well.
I think there was like one scripted thing that was with Jessica Biel and Bill Pullman, I'm going
to
say.
Oh, that's, yes, I think that moved to Netflix, The Sinner.
Right, which was like a sometimes based on a true story, like, and it was crimey and trying to be dark and, you know, people wearing a lot of sweaters and a lot of blue gels. So that was not Blue Sky, that was Blue Gels. And then the Chrisleys just took over and then they went to jail and I don't know what they're doing now.
So, yes, it's like
jailing.
The Miz and Mrs. with the Miz from wrestling and the Big D is like a relationship show. Temptation Island.
Nobody beats the Miz.
Nobody beats the Miz. Yes, that's right. So some ways this feels like 2012 to me. We heard the last clip where Eddie was like, you know, they just make things up. That would have fake news now and it could not be delivered by a character we're supposed to like. It is not permitted in 2023 for anyone to say reporters ever do anything wrong. Also, the idea that this scandal about a Senate candidate would stretch across multiple days and like ruin people's lives, which is sort of quaint. It takes hours for Paige to even hear about anything happening because she left her phone downstairs. for a while before she looked at it. What?
Tara, let me ask you this. If your phone's not in your hand, where is it?
Bra.
Bra.
No.
It's in my bra. I don't always have pockets. And sometimes when I do, because I don't use AirPods, I still have corded headphones. The cord will snag on like drawer pulls and stuff. And I can't have that. That's why it's in my bra.
High cup.
Mm-hmm. High cup. Dave. Also feels like 2012. Gary Cole's hair, not glorious. Mm-hmm. Too short.
Yeah, it's too short for him. Yeah. He looks good with wavy.
He's mm-hmm. he's got good hair. He's got Jeff Bridges hair. Mm-hmm. And Divya is using a matchmaker to meet people, not an app. This also makes it feel very, very old-fashioned. Yeah. But anyway, Dave, you've critiqued me for basically saying, without saying it, this show is beneath my notice or should be.
No. It's not what I'm saying.
Okay.
What I just didn't understand is...
the appeal.
What is captivating about this show that keeps you in front of the screen, engaged enough to produce this segment? Do you know what I mean? Like, there are shows... like, I don't think I have a direct correlation here, but I would say, like, something like Ancient Aliens in the how much I casually enjoy it and the attention paid in the moment, perhaps.
Yeah.
That I understand the appeal of it, but unless I'm going back and reviewing it for something here, I couldn't tell you what happened after I watched it.
Yeah. I mean,
and neither could... any of these. Like, I mean, the irony is that you're asking us what the sort of enduring appeal of something that is not enduring is.
Right.
First of all, we've been talking about it longer than it probably warrants. But second of all, the point is that, like, first of all, your wives are kind of magpies and we like shiny things and it's really not that complicated. But also, we're TV critics and this is the kind of thing that it's like, there's just not that much to say beyond a plot recap and like the top three Lukes of the episode. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to unpack anything.
No.
Right.
It's just there.
It's smooth brain it's TV.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. My choice is actually from 10 years ago. It is NTSF:SD:SUV:: Season 3, Episode 5, TGI Murder. This is an Adult Swim parody of like CSI and Criminal Minds and all those sort of shows at all. It is created by Paul Scheer. It stands for National Terrorism Force, San Diego Sports Utility Vehicle. It is a dumb show. It could be quite uneven, but it's only 11 minutes, so... you're in, you're out. That's the glory of Adult Swim back in the day. This particular episode, though, is notable for the gleeful, manic performance from an actor we usually associate with kind of complex, dramatic roles in prestige TV and in film. It's the cold open. We open at family-friendly sports bar and chain restaurant, Tig Bigley's, owned and managed by the President of the Navy, played by Rob Riggle. When a group of fratty dudes whine about how Tig Bigley's competitor, Senior Dix, gives free nachos, it sets off the President of the Navy.
Where's our nachos? I don't know if you know, but like Senior Dix, they give you like a free nachos.
Oh, Senior Dix, my vagina hurts.
I don't have a vagina.
Let me tell you something about Senior Dix, all right? It's run by a two-bit shyster who doesn't know the first thing about family-friendly, party-centric, sports-themed, large-portion, affordable restaurant hotspots. Jerk off.
But we do know how to keep our customers happy. Enjoy this nachos and salsa flight. Compliments of Senior Dix. Now, what were you saying about my fine establishment?
Broker, good to say. When did you come in? I didn't.
I told you to shut this place down. Unless, of course, you want to end up like the last manager of Tig Bigley's.
What? He accidentally got tangled up in some rope and fell into his trunk and then drove off the Coronado Bridge, didn't he?
No, I murdered him.
In case you couldn't place that resident voice, that is the late, great Lance Reddick, sporting a white soul patch and like Guy Fieri adjacent flame festooned shirt, playing Todd Broger, owner, manager of Senior Dix down the road.
It's not until that clip when he's like, Senior Dix, that I actually got, Senior Dix. Okay, I get it. Thank you.
I got it just now. Thank you, Tara.
At that whistle, Todd's goons bust up the joint. He gleefully and manically applies a red-hot Senior Dick's cattle brand to the president's forehead as the CSI-style credits roll. After the credits are done, with the president of the Navy in the hospital, in stable condition, which, as we learn, means he's like a horse in a stable, waiting to be shot and turned into glue, members of NTSF, led by Trent Hauser, that's Paul Scheer, arrive at Tig Bitley's.
I'm out. I vowed never to step foot in a bar again. I was a cooler. They brought me in when bars got too hot. I had a lethal move that stopped anyone in their tracks.
Hey, ID. ID, please. Head pop. Head
what happened next?
Pop,
I'm not too proud of.
Oh, he killed him.
Turns out, it wasn't a short, hairy biker. It was a dog in a Hell's Angels vest.
Whoa, hang on. How do you mistake a dog for a person?
You put sunglasses on anything, it looks human. That's why I never can step foot in a bar again.
I mean, technically you are in a bar right now.
Good point. I'm in. Let's do this.
Okay.
All right. So interesting timing on this one, because Tara, you just had your...
I was just going to say.
I am not a crackpot, I think, recently about don't kill dogs in the service of comedy. Interesting presentation here.
Mm-hmm.
In which is obviously not a dog as shot.
No.
It is a person.
Yes.
In a very big Twisted Sister-esque Dee Snider wig.
Yeah.
Walking into the bar, and then he does the head pop, which is his move as a bouncer. And then you hear the dog whining. So your thoughts on this? It is a dog in universe, but it's definitely not a dog in the show.
Yeah.
They're splitting the difference here. What's your take on this?
Well, I mean, you can't... My feeling about all of this is, like, you would have to be completely peevish to be mad about anything, really, that happens in the show. It is so silly. I mean, I guess not anything. But I'm this does not upset me. It's such a stupid show. And this is also a reference to, like, the head pop thing is a reference to Patrick Swayze in Roadhouse, like, ripping out someone's throat
with something.
His
yeah.
bare hand.
Yeah.
It's like all of this is complete nonsense. Like, it's, you know, I was not bothered by it.
I enjoy the idea that a Hell's Angels dog would have his own jacket, though.
Sure.
I find that.
They do.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know about the Hell's Angels, but I have seen motorcycle clubs that the dogs have their own kit.
Great. So the plan here is to reopen the bar and wait for Senior Dix to make another move. But since most of the staff here at Tig's were murdered during the melee, the task force will have to run the place. Trent rankles all the bouncers that are left and explains the plan.
We have to make sure we keep Broger's men out. So there's one rule we have to live by. Punch first, ask questions never. Now, there are three holes on the human body. Three holes... Three ways to die.
I'm sorry, man. Three holes?
Yeah.
I mean, from top down, you got two eyes, you got two ears, you got two nostrils, and a mouth. That's seven in your head alone. How the hell you come up with three?
Look, I'm not an anatomy expert, okay? What I'm an expert at is kicking ass and crushing trachea.
I'm not confident you even know what trachea is.
This actor, who, like, literally half his IMDb entry is dude's name Tiny.
Yeah.
So good.
Mm-hmm.
Did you clip the butthole?
No, I didn't. But that
I'm gonna just say it, man. Butthole. Like, this is a runner that he's like, don't forget the butthole. So good.
Yeah. So nine holes, I think. Do eyes count as holes though?
Yeah.
They're holes you have to make.
No, they're holes. Yeah, your eyes are just in them.
Okay. I guess anything could be a hole if you press hard. That's what we're learning here from Tara.
I mean, I don't know, Dave. Have you seen a skull before? They're holes.
Yeah, they're called sockets, but they're holes.
Yeah.
They're just occupied holes.
Yeah,
occupied holes. Thank you. Okay, I'll accept occupied holes. At the bar, as we follow our task force people, Piper, that is June Diane Raphael, is trying to get the reserve Daisy, that's Karen Gillan, to coyote ugly it up, I suppose is a good way to put it.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what the reference is, yes.
If you want people to pay, then you've got to get their attention.
He isn't using your body, just prostitution.
No, not if you're inside.
This is what I mean. It's not appropriate, but it's so dumb that it's hilarious.
And so fast, too.
Yes.
Gotta love it.
Yes.
And our last main task force character we get in this episode is Alphonse Inuit, Brandon Johnson. He is waiting on a table of soccer moms where the horny soccer mom Marge is placing her order.
Oh. No one touches my grinder. Oh. No one touches my grinder.
Why don't you bring me a bib? Because it's going to get juicy. It's going to get real juicy.
So in the second big get for this episode, which is just bizarre to think about in retrospect, that is Catherine Hahn playing horny soccer mom Marge.
Yep.
Making the moves on Alphonse here. Back at the bar, Red, the reserved Red, is in the Coyote Ugly groove when a familiar face arrives.
Daisy?
Dad? Dad, we can explain.
My entire life I thought you were a loser, a real nerd. And now, after this, proudest I've ever been.
Really?
Get back up there and make your father proud. And hey, take this. It was your mother's glow stick.
This is also a direct reference to Coyote Ugly. In case people have not seen that fine film, this is the John Goodman role this guy was just playing.
So finally, Todd arrives. He's going to kick some more ass. And the manner in which he arrives, and I've seen this episode maybe three or four times now, this became my favorite new part on rewatch. He arrives outside of the bar in like a lightly armored Senior Dicks branded party dune buggy.
Yeah.
Playing like an electronic party remix of La Cucaracha. Every time Lance Reddick is on screen, he looks like he's having the fucking time of his life.
Yep. Oh.
He's like, finally, somebody let me just let loose.
He is
on
committed.
Some stupid comedy. And it's real shame we didn't get more in this lane from him because he's so fucking good in this episode.
Yep.
He confronts Trent in the kitchen. He wants to employ Trent for his legendary bouncer skills, including the infamous head pops over at Senior Dick's. When he's rejected, though, Todd goes into Plan B, which is just a Molotov cocktail and some Lance Reddick dialogue unavailable in any of his other roles.
But I guess if you won't join us, then we go to Plan B.
Brother, what are you doing?
With all the framed polyester hockey jerseys in this place, your whole restaurant will burn to the ground in less than 5 minutes.
Also, you missed the part where in this speech, he refers to it as the slow fast food world, which is, I mean, fast casual is fine, but slow fast food is perfect for restaurants like Chili's, which, sidebar, this presentation might make me have to go there for dinner, just by the way.
Yeah.
Duly noted. So, as the place burns, Trent can't get Daisy or Piper off the bar because they're too scared to get down. So he employs some Coyote Ugly logic in order for that to happen.
Trent, we're too scared to get down!
Just imagine, this whole bar is a bar. And dance your way out. Use the Kid Rock music in your head. Trailer Parks. Jack Daniels. Rebel Flags. Triumph. Once you were poor, now you are rich. Tramp stamps. Vacations to Virginia Beach. Way to go, girls.
Red Dome, save yourself!
Drums. Steel guitars.
Jude Diane Rayfield, pretty good dancer.
So as we go through everybody trying to escape as the place burns, Marge the soccer mom is trapped by two strands of her party beans lightly caught on the chair.
Please help me. Help me, Alphonse. Why don't you use that fishing rod that's tucked in your pants? That Alaskan fishing rod.
I am a person, not an object.
I'm sorry. I have a hormonal imbalance, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm free. I'm free. I want to die. Well, I want to die doing it with you.
No, let's go.
Thank you.
You didn't even leave me a tip.
I missed that.
Me too.
That's so good.
His faces are so good.
And in the best scene in the episode, Todd and Trent face off and Lance Reddick goes truly deranged with his face acting. He is having, as I said, the time of his life, an absolute great time. And it is super fun, but you're going to have to actually go and watch it. It is on adultswim.com. It's something. His expressions, I'm probably going to put one in the show notes or maybe the album art or something like that. But when you see this picture and it doesn't bring you delight, then you're dead inside, I'm sorry to say.
Mm-hmm. Agree.
Lance is punching his stomach repeatedly. Mm-hmm. You just start staring at him. He just gets crazier and crazier eyes until he, like, Godzilla style, gathers the energy to punch back. Trent's only recourse to a fried food powered manager supervillain character is to bring the head pop out of retirement, which he does. He pops Todd's head clean off. And one of the last shots is Lance Riddick's head sitting on the floor in a pool of blood. Just grinning. Get right to it. Head pop.
Yep.
And then
giving the Manson lab.
We get this credit scene as the gang goes to Senior Dick's for a postmortem.
Senior Dick's.
Yes.
I gotta tell you, I'm glad my Tig Bitley's burnt down. I mean, the insurance money was sweet, and this place is awesome. I kind of regret getting my brand removed.
Yeah, this place looks just like Tig Bitley's, but with more sombreros.
I don't get why you had to kill Broger.
What? Daisy, get it. I made a mistake, okay? I learned my lesson. I won't do it again.
Hey, that guy didn't pay his check.
I'm gonna head pop that guy. Yeah!
Head pop! Head pop! Head pop! Head pop! Head pop! Head pop!
And that is the episode. All its 11 minutes of glory. What a treat to see Lance Reddick in here. My favorite episode of this show, mostly because of him. Frankly, I forgot Catherine Hahn was in it till I rewatched it. I'm like, holy shit, it's a tour. We got two in here. The series as a whole is kind of a B-plus sort of affair. It's not like top tier Adult Swim craziness. But this episode in particular, I absolutely love TGI Murder. Sarah, had you watched this show at all before?
I had seen a couple of episodes of it. I don't think I'd seen this one before. What luck that the dates lined up for us to see the great Lance Reddick, may he rest, and hear about Chipotle ejaculate in the happy hour appetizers. Yeah, this was like perfect. This is why Adult Swim content is so brilliant. That it's like, if it's not working, it's done.
Yep.
In like 10 to 12 minutes. Yep. So you just cycle through it. So yeah, this was great. Everybody was utterly committed and having a blast. Paul Scheer, like the secret comedic weapon of the, I mean, I feel like he might have been bigger back then, like 10 years ago, than he is now. Mm-hmm. Although I guess he shows up in Documentary Now stuff, but yeah, like his deliveries are also very good. He's very good at this stuff. So this was a joy. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. The sheer number of references to other, like, legendary bar content, I guess. Like, there's, you know, of course, there's Todd's, you know, shirt, the Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives reference there, but also the Coyote Ugly, which we talked about, and the extended, like, Roadhouse bit. Plus, just the, I mean, Senior Dick's is one thing, but, like, Tig Bitley's is the original name of this place, like... Someone really had fun with all of the, you know, making up all the names of all of their stuff. Like, you can't call it donkey sauce, but it's something equally stupid.
It's called world building, Tara.
I know, and I admire it. But, like, here's your flight of salsas. Like, it's so good. Like,
salsa flight. So good.
Stupid. And Lance Reddick, yeah. I mean, I think he did do other comedy. He was in Corporate, which we tried, and it didn't take. But he was, I know he had a long role in that. He showed up in, like, Key and Peele, I believe, and Black Lady Sketch Show. Like, he was around doing comedy. But yeah, Dave, you're so right. Like, it's a shame he didn't get to do even more, because he is so funny and so game. And, like, that voice just makes everything he says even funnier.
Yeah.
It really does.
Yeah, it really is a perfect combination for this show. Kudos to him for being on it, and Catherine Hahn for being on this weird little show in Adult Swim that, you know, probably 200,000 people watched at the moment. So. Yeah, fun all around. All right, guys, speaking about fun all around, you know what time it is?
Is it game time?
It's game time.
Game time.
Comma, non-regulation.
Oh.
All right, everybody, this is a non-regulation game time since we don't have valued guests in the mix. Today we are playing in the year 2013.
Hey!
In which you try to identify the scripted TV show that debuted the year we started Mark II, 2013.
Okay.
Here's how it will work. I will read you up to five clues. In order, they are a marketing tagline for a TV show, the setting of that show, and what I'm calling above the fold credit, which is a pretty good credit for somebody in the show, but not like at the tippy top of the list.
Sure.
A random bit of trivia as your fourth clue, and then your fifth clue will be the second build star on the show.
Okay.
You get to get a hint, take a guess at each level, inverse point system, 5 points for getting out the tagline, 1 point after the second build at the end of the hint list. Okay. We've got 14 questions today, plus a tiebreaker if we need it. No Grossworth Equalizer challenge zones. And the stakes are the winner of today's game will win one Mindy weather call for future use. That's right, a Mindy weather call for future use.
Okay.
We will start with Tara.
All right, Tara, are you ready?
Yes. Keep
in mind, all these shows debuted in the calendar year 2013.
Okay.
Tagline, worth 5 points if you can answer it correctly. He took office, they took over.
Is it called 1600 Pen?
5 points wow. Right away, yes. Bill Pullman.
Josh Gad.
Yep, Josh Gad. Jenna Elfman. Right. They're all in that show, yes. Short-lived 1600 Pen. Damn. Wow, 5 points out of the gate. Wasn't expecting that. Sarah D. Bunting, pressure's on. Your tagline... Thanks. Is be who you want to become.
Next.
The setting is 1984 in Castleberry, Connecticut.
Goldbergs?
Your above the fold billing for 3 points is Ellen Wong as Jill Mouse Chen.
Oh, Carrie Diaries.
Carrie Diaries, good for 3 points. Yes. Back to Tara.
Yes.
They will never let go is your tagline. They will never let go.
Titanic the sitcom. Just kidding. Next.
The setting is an intelligence service.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? Okay.
Your above the fold billing. Sam Underwood as Mark and Luke.
Next.
Your random trivia is... It involved the head, kind of a celebrated American writer-poet.
I still don't know next.
All right, your last clue. Second build, Sean Ashmore as Mike Weston.
Sleepy Hollow.
Damn
incorrect.
It.
Incorrect. All right, Sarah D. Bunting, what is that random trivia bit about? Do you remember? It involved the head of a celebrated American writer-poet.
Yes, it did. And the many conversations that I had with this head about this television program.
Oh, God.
What is it?
Yeah.
Do you remember the name?
Following. It's The Following.
The Following, yes.
It was the head of Edgar Allan Poe.
That's right. All right, no points for Tara there.
Sorry, Sarah.
We return to Sarah's.
Not as sorry as I was.
5 points. All's fair in love and Cold War.
The Americans?
The Americans is correct. 5 points. Yes.
Nice.
Back to Tara.
Yes.
A boy's best friend is his mother.
Bates Motel.
Bates Motel. 5 points. Yes.
Damn.
Sarah D. Bunting. She's been duped.
She's been duped. Oh. Orphan Black?
Orphan Black. Yes. Set in Toronto stealthily was your next clue. I refuse to believe that wasn't Toronto. enough sure clues there. I'm going to say it's Toronto. All right, Tatara.
Yep.
The tables have twisted.
Next.
Set in Virginia, Baltimore, and Minnesota too.
Homeland?
Above the fold billing, Scott Thompson as Jimmy Price.
Hannibal.
Hannibal, good for 3.
Nice.
All right, that was we're over halfway, guys. Your tagline, Sarah D. Bunting, no way in, no way out. Tagline for a 2013 TV show.
No way in.
Correct. And
no way out.
Right.
I don't know. Hint.
This takes place in Chester's Mill.
Oh, shit. Chester's Mill. Oh, picky bitch. Is this Under the Dome?
Yes.
What you just said
is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
Did you make up this game after you remembered Under the Dome premiered in 2013?
I cannot confirm nor deny.
Can you confirm that that was 4 points?
That was 4 points. That's for Chester's Mill, the setting. Yes. That clip was also the random bit of trivia.
Nice.
Tara.
Yep.
Every sentence is a story.
Orange is the New Black.
Orange is the New Black. Good for five. Yes.
Nice pull.
Sarah D. Bunting. Two heads are better than none. Two heads better than none.
Is none spelled the conventional way?
Oh, none is like nil.
Oh, okay, not
N-O-N-E. All right, okay. I don't think it matters. Is this Sleepy Hollow?
This is Sleepy Hollow. Yes, nice. Lots of 5 point answers. All right, everybody's got two questions left, so let's get scores, please.
Okay.
Got that Mindy weather call.
It's very exciting. I have 18 points. Sarah D. Bunting has 22.
All right. Still anybody's game. Let's get back to it. Tara Ariano, your tagline is the law without the order.
Oh, next.
It takes place in New York City.
Next.
Above the fold billing is Mark Evan Jackson as Kevin Costner.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine is correct. Good for three. Our random bit of trivia is EHG guest Will Hines is in 4 episodes.
He sure
of
is.
This show.
And he plays the same character in the Night Court reboot, so he's somewhere
amazing.
In the universe.
See you later, Westfall. See you later, that store market. We're now talking the Will Hines character extended universe. Mm-hmm. All right, Sarah D. Bunting. Never trust a criminal until you have to.
White collar?
This show takes place in Washington, D.C. area.
Area. Mm. Never trust a criminal until you have to. D.C. area. Is this Homeland?
Above the bold billing for Hisham Tafik as Dembe Zumba. Dembe Zumba.
That doesn't help me. Next.
This show also celebrated 10 seasons this year.
Oh, it's okay. It's still on.
Yeah, that's right. It's a good hint.
Until recently.
Why don't you just shut up, Tara, with your
roll
of your eyes.
Sorry, you're right.
Yeah.
Harumph. I still don't know. Do I have any hints?
You have one hint left. Second build for this show is Megan Boone as Agent Elizabeth Keen.
Oh, God. That was still on this year.
Yep. Never trust a criminal till you have to. Washington, D.C. Hisham Tafik as Dembe Zumba. Sorry. This show celebrated 10 seasons this year. Megan Boone playing Elizabeth Keen, an agent.
And her wig.
Blind spot?
Blind what?
I don't know.
The other one.
The other one, yeah. Is
the Blacklist.
James Spader in Blacklist.
Why?
All right, last show for each of you, Tara.
Yep. Oh,
shit.
Your tagline is not as glamorous as it sounds.
Selfie.
The setting is, looks like Southern California. I don't think they actually go into where it actually is.
Okay. Trophy Wife.
Yes, it is Trophy Wife.
What?
Yeah. Wow, nice. Good job.
All right, that was surprising. All right, Sarah D. Bunting, your last show. The legend takes new life. The legend takes new life. How many points does Sarah need, Tara?
Sarah needs 3 to tie, 4
to
win.
All right.
The legend
takes new life. Answering here would be gravy. Still can answer on the next one.
I don't really know, but I'm going to go with Agent Carter.
Agent Carter, not correct. This show is set in London. London.
Oh, Christ. Sherlock?
It's not Sherlock. All right, you need this to tie the proceedings. Your above the bold billing is Victoria Smurfit as Lady Jane Weatherby.
Dave, you're fucking crazy for this one.
Victoria Smurfit as Lady Jane Weatherby.
Weatherby?
Yeah.
The Tudors?
You're so close.
Your random bit of trivia is the lead character has appeared on this podcast before.
Uh, 2013.
The legend takes new life, set in London, has a Victoria Smurfit as Lady Jane. This character has appeared on Extra Hot, right?
Oh, fuck. Dracula.
Blah! Dracula is correct. Thank you for remembering. Yes.
So Dracula. Close.
All right, let's get them final scores, please, Tara.
Oh, my God. So close.
Delete.
Sarah finished with 24. I had 25.
Oh, so close. Dracula. Well fought.
God damn it. Good job, Tara.
I got the tiebreaker here for nothing, but let's just play it.
Okay.
I think you'll get it after the tagline.
Okay.
It follows a pattern from Dracula.
Sure.
Of sorts. Some cops are born, others are made.
Almost Human?
Almost Human is correct, yes. Shows Dave weirdly enjoys that are poor, poor shows.
That's your Blue Sky TV.
It is.
Exactly!
Yeah, you solved it. You solved it.
Tara.
Can I just say how crystal clear you just made your Blue Sky argument with that one little thing you just said right there?
Sarah.
They are my Blue Sky shows. Thank you very much, Sarah. All right, guys. That is it for another decade of Extra Hot Great.
Wow.
We made 473 main podcast episodes, 256 bonus episodes, and over 600 mini episodes, and talked about thousands of TV shows. And now we're done. Remember.
We're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano.
It's Parsonage Turner Syndrome.
And Sarah D. Bunting.
I'm going to just say it, man. Butthole.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
I'm sorry, we are about to close the door.